Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. Eric the Tech, how's my volume? I got to ask you, how's my volume? Got to go up. Just hold on there a second, folks. We're going to get this right. Had some issues here. I'm following this cord, believe it or not. Hang on.
Flippity jibbity nonsense.
Come on, man. Come on, people.
Come on, man. Who in the hell does he think he is? Who does he think he is?
How about now? Better. So here's okay. Folks, today, oh man, my head's just a pounding. Today is Tuesday, October 14, 2025. Just to give you an idea how things had gone today and why this happened, okay? Because look, this is live, right? It was just after 7 o'clock this morning. Now, today we had in the studio, we had fiber optics installed. And believe it or not, that cut our internet bill down significantly. I don't know why. I can't explain it. So anyway, we had that scheduled for this morning. And I had to be here to sign and all that stuff. Well, it was just after, I don't know, 7 o'clock my time. And my phone rings. And I, you know, first of all, I don't like phones. I figured somebody wants to talk to me. So I answered it. And on the other end of the phone is an attorney that I've been, we have a, obviously I'm consulting with a client, and the attorney is my client's attorney anyway. So here's how the conversation went this morning. Hey, Doug, when you come to testify today, when you come to trial today, bring this document and this file. And I said, huh? Excuse me? What do you mean, testify at the trial today? That wasn't even on the schedule. That was Oh, no. That was changed on Friday. And I said, okay, but I wasn't informed, you know. And he said, oh, yeah, it was. So anyway, make a long story short, I had a rush, you know. Not that I was, I was up, okay, but I had a rush to get ready, rushed down to the courthouse. And of course, you know how that goes, right? Because when you're in a rush, number one, you hit every red light there is. And number two, you're behind every slow person there is. And number three, you know, there's all, everything goes wrong. But I made it just at the nick of time. And you know, usually before testimony, you have a little sit down with the attorney and stuff. And this was no easy little deal, right? Yeah. So 4 hours later, 4 hours of testimony. Now it's pretty good because I did not have to be, there was no rehabilitation. There was direct and then cross, but there was no need for any kind of rehab, recross or redirect, that is. So it was good. I mean, and I should say this, prevailed. So we won. All right. Now, but I missed the fiber optic thing. So I had to make, I had to have somebody make calls to get for the signal, for all that stuff. And then, so I checked everything before the broadcast, and I looked at the I couldn't get my preview monitor to work, which was not an internet thing. But what I didn't notice was that control box that sits here. Apparently, somebody had pulled a wire and knocked the control box, which was why I was looking over here looking for that box, because it fell into a file cabinet. Just saying. So I'm kind of waiting. Oh, and then I was supposed to have another consult this afternoon. Well, and I'm going to get into this because this has everything to do with identifying the people where we need to identify and prosecute. But anyway, wires got crossed. I was supposed to meet somebody in my office for a consultation, which, look, I just, you know, I can't do field work anymore. I'm just like beat up and stuff.
Sad.
Oh, man. Isn't it though? Can I complain? I mean, can you give me some cheese with my wine? Anyway, I ended up at spending the afternoon then with a detective who decided to, I shouldn't say it now. Yeah, he was supposed to be in bomb training or bomb disposal class. Bomb disposal class. EOD, you know. I said, man, you better, with the rate I'm going and all the friends I'm making, you just please go and please pass. But here's where all of this pertains to you and me. The FBI is, in fact, paying attention to what's going on. The insurrection from within. Now, you may have heard, folks, I'll tell you what, let me bring up the chat. And if you haven't done this already, join us on Rumble. Join us on Rumble. It doesn't cost anything. You just sign up, create an account. If you want to engage in the chat feature, you can do that. I'd love to read your comments. Just be nice, because if you're not nice, it makes Doug really angry. But no, be nice. And add to the intellectual discourse, as in your comments. I put up a notice, which I do it probably every once, I don't know, every 6 months, I'll toss up a notice saying in the comments section on Rumble, just, you know, no personal attacks. Don't make fun of people's appearance, especially mine. You can make fun of me, but not my appearance. But you know, just, and just use your heads, because what we want to do is develop intellectual discourse. We don't want BS, right? We really don't. No personal attacks and whatever. All right. And if you want to make fun of people's appearances, I don't care if you go after, you know, the purple haired, tatted up, pierced up, you know, Antifa thugs and BLM people. They're fair game. Just not each other. Just not each other, because life's too short. All right. So here's the reason one of the reasons why I mentioned that, because I had to kind of get my own grounding here and get grounded, was because we're going to identify who is behind, exactly who and how the funding works behind the orchestrated chaos, the attempted takedown from within in our country. We're seeing it today, who our enemies really are, and what we need to do about it. Now, you may think, well, didn't we already talk about this? Because, you know, we did last week. We talked about some of it, but not all of it. Now, this week, beginning on Friday, I'm just going to say this, beginning on Friday, I was in contact with some federal agents in a good way. No, they didn't drag me out of my house. No, at least not then. Much to the sadness of sedition hunters, that this piece of crap over there that, I digress. And I mentioned it to someone. I said, you know, there were some questions that I got. And I thought that was highly unusual. It was a telephone call followed by a face-to-face, okay? And I'm thinking, well, come to find out, somebody had given some information that, well, I sent some information, and then somebody had given information, which I gave to you, to the regional office of the FBI. And I thought that was rather interesting that they were interested in the information that we developed. And they specifically, there were some questions about what chat rooms and what websites and, you know, passwords and identities and, you know, a little bit of technique, but mostly the information and if we saved some of the information. So it's pretty good. I'm kind of optimistic about things. But then I mentioned that on Friday or Saturday to somebody who said, hey, I think it was Saturday. I said, hey, really? Did the feds come over? I said, no. I mean, it was a face-to-face, but anyway. So this individual said, I'm going to send you a link. And how many people saw this? I was gobsmacked. How do you like that for the word of the day? When I saw this, I thought, really? This is good. This is video one. It's 3 minutes. And I'm going to go in the chat here. I want to see how many people saw this or are aware of this. Because I'm encouraged. Not a ton. I'm encouraged. And the individual that the agents that I spoke with, really good people. I mean, when I say good people, I'm talking about people who believe in agents who believe in the Constitution, agents who are loyal to the current director and deputy director. Okay. Is that okay to say? I mean, is that kind of, you understand what I'm referring to? So anyway, when I told somebody from our group this and that, hey, you know, y'all are making the difference, I got this in return. So watch this 3 minutes. I did not know about this before. I got it in a text or in a message, I should say, the link in a message. And then I followed up and I thought, hey, man, things are moving. So here's video one in the show notes at HagmanPI.com. 3 minutes, here it is. Watch this.
Last week, I did a TV show that apparently got the FBI's attention. The topic was initial investigation, a jumping off point, shattering the myth that Antifa just, you know, it's just leaderless and decentralized. We thought, no, it's really not. So we dove in head first and we analyzed the Antifa network, and we went from the street thugs to the support groups, eventually to the funding. Okay. To say the FBI was interested in this might be an understatement. Let's just say the FBI is turning over every single stone. It is so clear to me that they are exploring all angles of this, and they are talking to anyone and everyone that can give them any kind of information. How do I know? Saturday, I get a phone call. The director would like to send over some agents to speak to you, Glenn. And I'm like, the FBI agents? Yes, you said some things that they need to talk to you about. And I'm like, but good things are bad. You know, they'll be over. So they sat in my living room. Three agents sat in my living room on Saturday afternoon for almost 2 hours. And I immediately called Jason. I'm like, Jason, you're the researcher. It's your fault. I'm going to throw you under the bus. You better get your butt over here. So Jason was there, and my wife and Jason and I sat there, and it was surreal at one point. I talked to him for about 15 minutes just going over the Tides Foundation and saying, if you understand Tides, you'll understand how difficult your job is going to be. And this is information that I first gave on Fox years ago. Let me just say this. Finally, we have an administration and an FBI director that is willing to go in deep. Not surface, but deep. I can only imagine what we could have avoided if anyone in an administration would have done this in 2011. But if I were in that imaginary group of Antifa, which, by the way, has imaginary leaders leaving the country to go maybe to imaginary countries outside of the U.S. right now, I would be very concerned if I were part of anything that was sending money their way or assistance their way. I don't know. I might be a little concerned because the FBI is dead ass serious. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Donald Trump, Kash Patel, and all of the agents at the FBI.
All right. That was, did you folks, were you aware of that? Did you see that? Because I didn't see that. It was later in the weekend. I think it was Saturday night, Sunday morning, something like that. I didn't know that. And now there's a difference in the questions. First of all, the director did not ask. I mean, no. And it wasn't the it was a regional field. Sack of a regional field office. Okay. And there was an interest in one particular group, which we're going to talk about. So it wasn't as vast as Glenn's research. I don't even want to be compared to that. No. We don't want to be compared to that. No. Because obviously he's got a research team. Well, we do as well, but our primary focus is on children, rescuing children. And this is more show research. So, and I do 99.9% of my show research for programs like this. So I don't want to overstate anything. In fact, I would feel better understating it. But I want to bring this up only because I've been kind of down a little bit, down on federal law enforcement. And to have someone reach out and say, hey, you know what? What do you got? And where are you at? And, you know, can you put some stuff together? I felt pretty good about that. I really did. So, but again, not to the extent, believe me, not to the extent of Glenn Beck. If we can just move the needle a little bit by way of certain regional groups, then, hey, great, fabulous. Okay. Thank you for the responses in the chat about, hey, yeah, I did see it or didn't see it. Thank you. All right. So having said all of that, now, one of the best things I can tell you is that chaos is being planned. Destruction is being planned. The pushback against federal. Then you may say, you know what? Shut up already. We know all of this, but we can actually prove by way of handles, by way of IP addresses, where all of this, where number one, the operational planning is coming from, and it's different in different parts of the country. But one of the things that just blew me away was the convergence of groups. You know, all of this trans stuff, the teachers who are pushing this. Now, hear me out, because, man, this is mind-blowing. The very funders, the very infrastructure that is funding, in most cases, not every single cause or case, but in most cases, you've got a common infrastructure of funding. You have a common banking deposit type system. You have the same shell companies. As an example, we'll say Acme products. And they have the five shell companies. And one of them is Acme Junior. And the other shell company might be Acme the second. Obviously, this is all just made up. But when you start working from the ground up and start following the money, so it goes to Acme Junior, the money comes into Acme, the parent company, and then goes to Acme Junior, then Acme the second, and then from there it's deposited into various accounts, and the banks, kind of the same banks, the same banks for funding trans causes, for funding some of the activist campus activities, and then for funding the operational equipment for the operational foot soldiers in places like Pittsburgh. Hat tip to Pittsburgh. Portland, Chicago, you get the idea, right? So it's the same bank, sometimes the same account numbers, and how we know the account numbers or about the account numbers is from pocket litter from the people, from the foot soldiers. So, okay, pocket litter. And that does, when I say pocket litter, the things that papers on people, on their person or in their vehicle or... you get the idea. I'm not going to get too deep into that because that just don't want to. Yeah. Just some to buy those puffy balloon animal suits or whatever those things are. It gets me when I see that. But anyway. And then, hang with me here. You wouldn't believe this, maybe. Did you know that there was an article written by White Collar Fraud? I included this in my show notes last week, but I didn't talk about this. But this came up, and there was a finding here that, you know, New York City mayor-to-be, mayor expected, that Islamic communist Mamdani, whatever. The Islamic communist in New York City, mayor-to-be. When you follow the money, and this is, let me just, you can put this on the screen next to me if you want. This is... No, you got to see this because this is incredible. This was a great piece. This is a piece of investigative investigation and investigative reporting that is stellar. I mean, absolutely stellar. And it fits right in with everything that we found. So this is page 3 at Hagman PI. And to get to our show notes, very simple. Just go to HagmanPI.com, 2 N's on Hagman. When the show is up, you click on the title to the show, and that opens up to a page that underneath the audio, it shows all of the source links. Okay. And everyone gets the credit they deserve. And in this case, it's White Collar Fraud. So Eric the Tech, if you can put that up next to me, if you have the ability and time to do that, because I do want to touch on this again, a stellar piece of reporting, and a surprising one at that, because what you see on the ground, believe it or not, again, what you see on the ground in Portland and Chicago and other cities, and some of the initiatives in schools, especially in the blue cities, the source of funding, when you follow the money, And it really is a circular funding machine in a sense. They're all the same people. They're all the same NGOs. They're all the same, essentially the same sources. We are going to be getting back to this, but I wanted to just bring this up because this investigation was published, I don't know, a week plus ago, maybe at the end of September. And again, hats off to this website, this investigative piece, this investigator, because they found, for example, Bend the Arc, this initiative, this organization, endorses this Islamic communist person to head America's largest city. So, what's Bend the Arc? Bend the Arc, the full name, Bend the Arc Jewish Action. They take from that what you will. That's its name. They endorsed Queens Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani for New York City mayor. That was on September 26th. They never endorsed a mayor before as an organization. Supposedly, this is like a grassroots independent political decision. No, it's not. Writes, citing from the article, within 72 hours, professional fundraising campaigns and organized training events were operational, raising questions about pre-existing infrastructure. Bada bang, there it is. And right below that, there's a graph. Okay. The $13 million pipeline. I don't think this could be done any better, because if I wanted a forensic accountant to talk to me like I was, 10, this kind of summarizes it very well. The question in that box, the question, now, how do tax-deductible donations become political endorsements through circular funding? Now, if I was to go through all of this, you guys would be bored stiff. You'd be watching, reruns of I Love Lucy or I don't know. So I'm not going to do that. But pay attention to that graph right there. And just follow the money here. This is pretty much the standard operational procedure in this particular instance with the New York City mayoral race. But you can apply this to just about any communist leaning or communist campaign leader, whoever. Just read this, okay? Again, I'm not going to go through this because you would not like me afterwards in terms of, it's pretty dry stuff. And I've had enough, 4 hours of dry stuff today. At least two of the four were dry. But anyway, so there's that. Okay, so we're all sitting back here, aren't we? And we're all saying, what the hell? Why? Where are the arrests? Where and why hasn't anyone been arrested? And even worse, and this is something I really had a hard time with, and I still do. If you have a group of insurrectionists, and I'm not talking, in no way were the J6 participants, January 6 participants, insurrectionists. That was not an insurrection. But if you have a group of individuals who are constantly, 100 plus days solid, attacking a federal building, attacking federal buildings, plural, attacking federal agents, attempting to enforce laws, constitutional laws, why are the municipal police for example, in Chicago, in Portland. And this is not just limited to those two cities. There's stuff happening in pretty much all big blue cities, including Minneapolis. You don't hear about this. You don't know. You only hear about Portland and Chicago. But look, I don't know. But this is happening pretty much in every big blue city across the U.S. So inquiring minds want to know, why are these goons, these Antifa goons, allowed to attack, allowed to insurrect their asses off? And unlike any January 6th velvet rope walker or grandma, or unlike anyone who dares pray outside or near or anywhere within eyeshot of a Planned Parenthood, why are the police allowing the communist goons, trans Tifa, Antifa, what doesn't matter? Why are they allowing them to attack the federal facilities, to attack the federal agents, to destroy federal property, including vehicles? And I would add this, some of the vehicles are owned by some of the federal agents out of necessity. That's another story. But, well, frankly, I guess I could say this. Some of the federal vehicles have been burned, and not literally, but their identities have been outed by the Antifa operational foot soldiers, and oftentimes disabled by way of flat tires, broken windshields, or set on fire. Okay. But that's what's happening. Is it being reported? No. And sometimes that's happening with federal agents inside. Again, my question is, what the hell? Why isn't anyone doing anything? I mean, help me understand this. And you saw, folks, I'm sure you saw Nick Sorter out there. There was an American flag, U.S. flag, American flag on fire. And he goes and puts the flag, takes it away from a goon and puts the fire out. And there was some, you know, handsy stuff on both sides. But Nick Sorter gets arrested. Now, I don't know Nick Sorter. I don't know what his intent is. I just know what I saw in the video. And I think I might even have the video. Folks, did you see this? Again, I'm talking to the chat, people in the chat. Let me see. I do have it. So I've got two. In fact, if you go to clip 7, let's play the longer one, okay? This is, when I say longer one, this is 55 seconds. But in case there's anyone who hasn't seen this, and it's happened more than once, and it's happened more than to Nick Sorter, and it's happened both in Chicago as well as Portland. I think it did happen in a third city. I don't recall which one, to another individual. But every time the aggressors, the Antifa, the communist insurrectionists have gotten off, either by not being arrested or by being arrested and immediately let back into the wild, kind of like a catch and release, or otherwise unpunished. Oh, I think through research now, I think we're 70% on our way to finding answers. And it's not encouraging, at least not. But however, now that there's some questions at the federal level being asked on the people who are actually doing the work, I'm a little bit encouraged. But so let's go to cut 7 here. In case you haven't seen it, let's watch it. This will give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Then we'll go to cut 6. That's a 27-second Fox report. And then I can expand on this, because this is where it really, I'm telling you right now, it's going to really hack you guys off. All right, here it is.
With the flag.
Mark's a veteran. He's got it.
This is for the audio listener. Well, I just didn't go.
Mark, your
iPad
is a buzzer.
Title
Portland PD just hanging out watching people get
assaulted. All right. That obviously you can see, but the audio, certainly for audio listeners, they're probably throwing things. Okay. Now, here's Fox reporting on this. And I should add this. I'm not a fan of any news station, whether it's Fox or CNN or NBC, ABC, CBS, you get the idea, right? I'm not really a fan because all of them are extremely biased to the left or by orders of smaller magnitude bias, period, to the left. Some will argue Fox. Oh, no, no, Fox is like, you know, the place to go. Okay, well, no. But so we pick these selections not because of any network but because of the content, and Fox had this one, so here is cut six.
Now, anti-ICE protesters also set this American flag on fire before it was ripped away by independent journalist Nick Sorter. He put the flames out and took the flag away. That led to him being cussed out by protesters. More on him in a second, but lastly, want to show you this. Take a look.
We will. Hey, we're just pretending you're out.
Whoa.
I'm not doing.
Yeah. So, boy, wasn't that just informative, right? All right. That was a taste of what Fox played and didn't play that much more. Really didn't have a whole lot of content about it. And you have to ask, what the heck is going on here? You know, why isn't more given more time, more airtime? And why aren't they pushing for answers? But that's a different discussion. Okay. So, a couple of the, I'll just come right out and say this. Things changed last month, and they changed because of internal push within this administration and internal push inside this administration. People such as Tom Homan has had something to do with this. And I know exactly that I can say this with authority. There are members of ICE at higher levels really were pushing. Tom Homan summoned DHS. There was a presence that are pushing, but they were pushing the inner circle of the Trump administration, and that began in earnest probably in mid to late July, and that ran through August as the summer went on. Finally, and I'm sure you folks have seen this, and this was the result of that nudge push. Hey, we've got to do something here. And with the information that was available to the Trump administration, and I believe this to be correct because the primary mover, shaker, operational hinge is in fact Antifa. But of course, as you well know, Antifa is just an idea. It's decentralized. We can't track anything. Bull. And I'll show you, I'll map this out for you. And I think you might be a little bit surprised as to where some of the money is coming from. The most of the money is coming from, you won't be, but some of the money is coming from, but also what's happening on the ground. and who's paying for what and where some of the money is going. That's going to be a really big surprise for you. So page two, on September 26th, Antifa, by orders of President Trump, was declared a domestic terror organization and a domestic terror threat. Two different, it's a distinction with a difference, okay, in this case. So this is from the White House. And section one reads Antifa as a terrorist threat. And of course, they describe, it's described, Antifa is described as a military type operation, anarchist enterprise that calls for the overthrow of the United States government. And a lot of people will deny that, but it's documented. It's written in books. It's written in their own literature. And of course, it spells out that they use illegal means to organize and execute a campaign of violence and terrorism nationwide to accomplish goals of the overthrow of the U.S. That's their objective. Okay. All right. Unless you're talking to a leftist lunatic, and of course, that's so far from the truth, according to them, that, you know, and when you look at the history of Antifa, the anti-fascist movement, it's like anything else. It's been hijacked. One could argue, let me just preface by saying, one can argue the intent has been hijacked, because this goes back World War II, you know, really the beginning of the 20th century. However, in its current iteration, it is an anti-capitalist, anti-freedom, tyrannical military operation that's operating on U.S. soil. So it has been declared a terrorist threat in the EO of September 20th. I'm sorry, September 22nd. I think it's the 26th. It was the 22nd. The second designation, or section two, it's a terrorist organization. This is really important because this can be used to seize the assets of this particular organization, seize money, bank accounts, and both the totality of this could be used to arrest the people involved in the infrastructure of the terrorist organization. Now, for federal troops that, or for federal agents and troops, this also allows for, but does not specifically name or identify the fact that arrests can be made by federal agents, okay, in terms of an Antifa target. And the question would be also, you can obviously find out, a federal agent working a specific case can identify someone in this country illegally, but how do you, without necessarily conducting an investigation, or just like on the street, at the street level, how do you identify someone who is deeply embedded in or with Antifa? That's a little bit more challenging. But that part is coming as well, because there's information that's being collected that will identify the people. I don't want to be very specific. I don't think it would be prudent, because there's operational there are investigations going on right now that will identify those people. Okay. So I'll just say it like that. Now, I was striving for kind of a short version of exactly what the intent of not just Antifa, but BLM. And you remember the movements like Occupy Wall Street, Occupy, the various groups that took over cities way back in like 2008, 9, 10. You remember that. Well, if you go back and look at some of the videos, and we went through a lot of videos, and when you go back and look through some of the archived, the things that have been archived, you're going to find a lot of the usual suspects. I'm not talking about the foot soldiers. I'm talking about the operational assistance given to the cannon fodder of the streets, the low IQ morons, you know, carrying umbrellas and dressing in black and wearing masks and acting like idiots, okay? Again, the infrastructure we've proved to be pretty much the same. So, Eric the Tech, if you can, let me just see here. If you can put up, I did throw some attachments or some images here. I just want to show you. Maybe I didn't. I guess I didn't. Oh, yeah, yes, I did. Yes, I did. Here it is in a link, not an attachment. This would be standby because it's coming. It's coming. Maybe not. Their objective is, there's like seven point plan, and ultimately is to overthrow the U.S. But they also spell out things like enslaving the population, the white population in particular. If you're, think SDS, remember SDS back in the 60s and 70s, you remember us talking about that. The infiltrators into SDS, the Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn and all those people, but those who infiltrated Larry Grathwall. May he rest in peace. Obviously, we've talked to him, but this is the same. These are essentially the same objectives. And what they've done, what the people involved here have done, is they've expanded and refined their operations, and they've also become much better funded, and the funding has been difficult to trace because of the maze of NGOs and shell corporations. So hang on here now. Obviously, if you go back in time, and this is important, and then I'm going to get right into this is kind of the background, I guess. I'm going to get right into who is behind what and what we can expect, because they're planning stuff. And it's not just Antifa. It's not just BLM. It's just there's multiple organizations and then chapters of the multiple organizations. But what caught my attention is, why are some of the people in political leadership, whether it's senators or Congress critters on the federal level, or the mayors, or even some of the police leadership of the police departments, why are they so pro-Antifa? Well, it's either ideologically driven, or it's there's an element of money that is being transferred. And in some cases, both. And I would say both probably is the correct answer for the majority of these people. But it's not, for example, there's not a check that's written to them, or there's not, you know, a gold bar that's handed to them. Well, that might, maybe. But it's all hidden through campaigns and PACs and lobbyists. And I mean, there are bagmen that exist. So Oh, ImageLink 1, Plan Chaos. Here are the objectives here, because this is what they want to do right now. As a matter of fact, the latest, you can put this up. Well, yeah, you can put that up if you want. The Image 1, it's not chaos, it's planned. If you look at what's going on here and how long this has been going on, obviously, this is not new. You import migrants to destroy the culture of our country. Why do you think the left is fighting so hard against deportations? It's not because they like these people. It's because you need that to dilute. You need these people to dilute our culture, what's important to us, and those who are willing to destroy everything that we hold dear. That's what number one. Jail citizens for criticism. Isn't that coming true, or isn't that true? It has been true. And then you turn police against citizens. What would you see with Nick Sorter? You think he's the only one? Hell no. There are many, but they just don't have the influence, in quotation marks, of Nick Sorter. They're just people like you and I trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And actually, some have channels and they try to report it and they get arrested. But you know what? They don't have the platform. So no one gives them the time of day. And yeah, they pay dearly. But then if you're like, for example, in Chicago, perfect example in Chicago, look at the police leadership there, the chief of patrol, taking a pass of arresting Antifa or the communist insurgents, instead arresting anyone who dares to disrupt their operation. You might ask, well, why would that be? Well, he's acting upon orders from the mayor. Absolutely. Did you ever ask, in addition to those orders, is there any money changing hands? There's something called economic reality. If you're making $100,000 a year in a job and you're living in a $95 million house, that's an exaggeration, of course, or you're driving a Rolls or a Bentley that's brand new. Gotta tell you, economic reality doesn't exist, or it's being bent. So did you inherit some money? Did you win the lottery? Oh, are you getting paid from maybe people, you know, behind the money? I would go with the latter. Okay, so, but the bigger thing here too, and this is where it gets really hard to kind of, to me, it's like, okay, this almost doesn't make sense. Invoke digital IDs and surveillance from the digital IDs. Well, why would people involved in black money ops want that? Because, frankly, they think they can make a buck and not have to comply with that kind of stuff, and they're stupid. I mean, frankly, they're stupid, okay? The others believe that they will run that. Number five, I can't see that. Let's see. Bankrupt the bankrupt nation to eliminate government. They want a government that is gone. Essentially, they want, depending on the group, they don't want government. They don't want any oversight. They don't want any laws or rules, and especially not a representative republic, constitutional republic like we have. And of course, everyone, they're all anti-private property. And you know where I see this a lot, or where we see this? I think about this. I'm just going to say squatters' rights, right? You look back, or you look into the places that are saying, squatters have rights. I'm going to tell you, in 100% of the cases I've looked at, 100% of the time, the councils, the lawmakers invoking the squatters' rights, no. They are absolute hardcore communists, don't believe in private property ownership, which, of course, that eliminates private property. And then ultimately, transfer citizens to a global governance, submit to this global governance, which ties to the number four, digital IDs and surveillance. And but again, there's a disconnect there. Some people don't believe that they'll be subjected to that or subject to that, and that's because they're stupid and they're brainwashed. And the fact of the matter is, they don't believe it can happen to them, or they think it's all just a wet dream, and it's not going to happen, but it will. All right. So then one more thing, a couple more things here. We saw this. You know about this. Brandon Johnson is probably one of the biggest, I should say, mayors that is extremely anti-ICE. Extremely. In fact, he is bordering on, in my view, going against the supremacy clause, but going against the Constitution. Yes, there is such a thing as states' rights and such, but all of that has to be consistent with the and complementary to the Constitution of the U.S. But Brandon Johnson has gone a lot further than anyone else. Watch this. And folks, again, you probably have seen this, but understand how bad this is. And more people are backing him up, and more blue city mayors are taking the nod from Johnson to do very similar things. Whether it's Portland or Seattle or Minneapolis. Minneapolis is some place you really have to watch for a lot of reasons. But here is cut. I'm not going to play the short one, or let's not play the short one. Let's go to video 5, because you need, I think this is where it starts. Okay, now this is an exhibit that can be used in court that will point directly to certain groups and subgroups. And this is where we get into the money trail, because if I spend too much time on the money trail, you could, like I said, it would just blow your mind, and it doesn't make for a good presentation, no matter how many flowers and stuff we have and puppies jumping over rainbows. No, because it gets really dry and very hard to follow. So anyway, here is the consequence of being paid to follow a certain, or not being paid. Here's the consequence of a mayor receiving cash and other assets to comply with an initiative, to comply with a globalist communist initiative. And this is how it looks. This is exactly how it looks. And I want you to see most of this and understand that he's not doing this from a position of protecting his citizens, the citizens of his city. This is a result of him being paid off. Him being paid off by certain people, names you know, by way of NGOs that you may or may not know, and PACs and other interests. I'll name those here momentarily, but watch this and listen. Here it is.
9/12, welcome back. We're going right to Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson speaking about an executive order amid the ICE actions in Chicago.
Building code violations. The residents were dealing with deplorable conditions already. And this was before ICE trampled on them. But when they came in the middle of the night, they terrorized the families that were living there. There were children who were without clothing. They were zip-tied, taken outside at 3:00 in the morning. A senior resident, an American citizen, with no warrants, was taken outside and handcuffed for 3 hours. Doors were blown off their hinges. Walls were broken through. Immigration agents coming from black Hawk helicopters to set up snipers on nearby buildings. This is America. One resident described the situation plainly, and I quote, "They had immigrants in one van and black people in another van." This raid wasn't about public safety. It was about and it's certainly not about immigration. This was about a show of authoritarianism, a forceful display of tyranny. They sent a clear message to all Chicagoans. They said, "We do not respect your rights. We can do anything we want, and we will film it and put it on social media." The very next day, ICE agents chased people outside of a homeless shelter on the south side and then caused a car accident on the west side. Immigration agents put a young black man in a chokehold on the side of the street in East Garfield Park. Witnesses, one of which you will hear from this morning, bravely filmed the interaction, eventually leading to this person's release. On Friday, agents dispersed tear gas in the middle of a busy city street. Chicagoans were hit with chemical agents while walking their children home from school. A couple ran from tear gas with a two-year-old child in their care. Agents went into the Humboldt Park Health Center and detained a sitting elected official, Alder Jesse Fuentes, of the 26th Ward, because she simply requested to see a warrant. On Saturday, they escalated even further by shooting a U.S. citizen. They claimed it was defensive fire. But frankly, we cannot trust anything that comes out of the administration. It was only a few short weeks ago that they claimed officers were severely injured in the killing of Mr. Villegas Gonzalez in Franklin Park. A Sun-Times investigation found that the agent said on a body camera footage that it was, in fact, nothing major. We have a rogue, reckless group of heavily armed mass individuals roaming throughout our city that are not accountable to the people of Chicago. Their actions put all Chicagoans at risk. When protesters confronted federal immigration agents in Brighton Park on Saturday, they were met with pepper balls and more repression. CPD responded to attempt to de-escalate the situation, and ICE tear gassed our police officers. Let me be clear. Tear gassing the women and men who serve as Chicago Police Department officers is not how we make our city safer. I'm calling for a full investigation into this incident and into all of the brutality that we have seen over the past week. They are taking police resources that should be in our neighborhoods, serving Chicagoans, and diverting them to deal with the chaos that they are causing. We need ICE out of our city so that we can continue to focus on the strategies that have been working to drive violent crime down. These actions tell us simple truth. If we allow this administration to take away due process for anyone, we will allow them to take away due process for everyone. They told us that this was about the worst of the worst. In reality, they are going after anyone who objects to families being ripped apart and community members being disappeared. ICE lies and people die. We cannot allow this to continue. We must take action more drastic than what we have taken before, because what we are seeing is a more radical attempt to undermine our democracy. And today, we are signing an executive order aimed at reining in this out-of-control administration. The order establishes ICE-free zones. That means that city property and unwilling private businesses will no longer serve as staging grounds for these raids.
All right, you can shut him up. Folks, okay. Pretty much everything that he described has been either exaggerated, misrepresented, or is an outright lie. All right. And the talking points, he got the talking points from one organization actually a combination of two, but one primary and the other secondary. Obviously, the secondary organization would be Antifa. The fact that he would create an executive order saying, ICE, you're not allowed here. What he is saying, you're not allowed to protect the federal buildings, and we're not going to allow the police to assist you. In fact, we're going to have the police arrest you based on our executive order. Should you decide to continue protecting the property and the people and the agents. So, and also arrest the criminals. So that does, it's not consistent with the Constitution, the Supremacy Clause, and all of that. So where did this come from? Because I wondered where this came from. And if you start digging, you'll find that verbiage, the instructional operational verbiage, to come from an organization that has been around, but has been it's been morphed. The group is titled, or the group is called, Behind Enemy Lines. Now, it's interesting because that group, Behind Enemy Lines, was, guess where it was originated? Guess where it was founded? Yes, you're right, Chicago. And guess who really kind of, there was this position of community leadership, community organization. Doesn't that sound familiar? How about Barack Hussein Obama? There are some tentacles that reach into the Behind Enemy Lines activist forces. But Behind Enemy Lines, they say themselves that they're operating in the belly of the beast, that their method of operation is to, thank you for putting that up, is to disrupt and cause chaos, that in fact the law enforcement officers have recognized this as a militaristic organization, and their core cause. Yeah, and that's an interesting picture there for a number of reasons, and I'm glad you put that up. But their core cause is to resist U.S. imperialism, destroy capitalism, sow violence, and bring the fight into the U.S. And they happen to be very pro-Palestinian, very anti-Israel, and they also are part of the October 7th group. So you have this, and I'm glad, just go ahead and keep that picture up there, because what you see there is the founder and CEO, I guess, of the Behind Enemy Lines slash, well, the Behind Enemy Lines and October 7th group, both of these organizations. That moron there is Michael Boyt. That's B-O-Y-T. He's 40 years old. That picture happens to be from a Zoom call taken in 2023. And there, if you can see the caption there, Genocide Joe is not welcome in Chicago. You remember the 2023. It was, well, that picture was taken in 2023, but they were talking about causing trouble for the DNC in 2024. These people are extremely supportive of Hamas, and this is where it gets really kind of problematic, more than problematic, because when you look, we all recognize that what is happening, for example, the indiscriminate killing in Gaza, we don't like that. Obviously, we do, we have a problem with that, children being killed, innocents being killed. We do have to face the realization that there are certain problems with Hamas, that where they hide and where they, the things that they do, not cool. And they cause themselves a lot of casualties. However, the response is not necessary, is not always commensurate with the, with what's taking place. But the fact of the matter is, we have Hamas or Hamas sympathizers in the U.S., and this guy is heading up a large part of the pro-Palestinian slash anti-Israel slash anti-Jew initiative. And his name is Michael Boyt. And if you look on his neck, he's wearing that scarf that's obviously showing him in support of Hamas. It's a keffiyeh? I think. Anyway, but at its core, what they brag and what they publish and what they talk about and what they claim to be is a Marxist vanguard for the communist revolution. This is their words, not mine. Okay. So they train and they are trained Marxists and they train Marxists. And it's again based in Chicago. It's gone from just not just a pro Hamas organization, but a full blown, in their words, communist vanguard. And again, behind enemy lines. This is the October 7th group. This is where it is. Now, where's the money coming from? Where's the funding coming from? It's coming from shell groups. The operation and funding, the logistics, they are they're receiving money from various organizations. But where's that money going to? It's going to, ultimately, at the ground level, paying people like this. For example, paying people like that, almost like a salary, undisclosed, undeclared salary. And the money is also going to create literature. And the U-Hauls that you see going to Portland, a lot of it's coming from the supporters of, again, this communist vanguard group. All right. The funders for this group, for Behind Enemy Lines, and I would add also for Antifa, for Black Lives Matter, and you can go all the way back to the Occupy, various Occupy stuff. There are the funding and support comes from three primary avenues. Obviously, you have the Answer Coalition. I'm sure you folks have heard about the Answer Coalition. Interestingly, another avenue of primary funding, now there's multiple secondaries, but the primary funding organs for groups, this group and others, including Antifa, Students for Justice in Palestine. So you've got Answer Coalition, which is a Marxist communist initiative that is funded by some foreign money, a lot of domestic money, but also from people like that Singham I spoke of. In fact, I've got that picture of Singham. You can put it up in place of that numbskull. I spoke about him last week. The communist who is a U.S. citizen living in Singapore, okay? And he is a tech oligarch. And I've got information about him here. Let me just grab it. I just have to read my own writing. Roy Singham. He's living in Singapore, and he is a U.S. citizen, but he owns the tech company, ThoughtWorks. And if you look at what does ThoughtWorks do? And some of the offshoots, you might find that interesting. You'll have to dig a little bit, but it's beyond the scope of what we're talking about here. But it does relate to some of the programs that you might be familiar with of old. He's a big funder. You also have him, you have him funding NGOs or putting money into NGOs. And that goes again through shell companies and ultimately into the operational stuff for these anarchists on the ground. And oddly, but I guess it shouldn't be oddly, a lot of this, or I would say 30 to 40% of the funding goes into political action committees and campaign coffers. And you might say, well, prove it, for example. All right. Well, explain this. By proving it, it would be easier for me to, and perhaps more demonstrative for me to show you a couple of things. What would cause a senator? What would cause a senator to say this? This is cut three. And this is Chuck Schumer. You know Chuck Schumer, right? Chuck Schumer said something recently that was very disturbing to me, and it should be to you as well. He called for every American to forcefully rise up against President Trump's federal government. Now, imagine this, a sitting U.S. senator calling for an uprising against President Trump's federal government. Does that even make sense? And even if you think it does, what would cause him to say that or to call for that? Is it ideologically driven, or is it perhaps monetarily driven? In his case, I'm going to say a little bit of the former, a lot of the latter, and that comes through, again, people like Singham into the through the shell companies and into, if you look at the various campaign stuff and the where the money comes from, you can backtrace that through the shell companies, and it gets really murky in there. But I'll tell you something. I mean, I'm sure there are investigators still trying to find their way out of that whole maze. But I'll just say this. A lot of it points to people like Singham, for example. But here's cut three, and you tell me. Here's cut three.
It is just such a hallmark of tyrannical, autocratic dictatorship societies that they use the prosecutorial department as a political weapon. It is a disgrace, and every American, I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, moderate, people should be forcefully rising up against this, speaking out against it, and making it clear how inimical this is to what our democracy has been for, stood for, you know, more than two centuries.
There's no Antifa. This is an entirely imaginary organization. There is not an Antifa.
Like, I don't even know what Antifa is. There is no group.
It's not even like far-right groups like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. Compared to right-wing extremists, Antifa-linked violence is rare and limited.
It isn't an organization. It is a in many ways, mythology.
It's not like the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers, you know, sort of defined terrorist organizations with leadership that leads violence.
It's not a highly organized movement. It's a moniker. It's not a unified group like the Proud Boys are. Things like Antifa are things that are thought up.
It's all in this guise of going after Antifa, which is nothing. There's no organization called Antifa.
Nobody's a member of Antifa because it doesn't exist. They are just declaring into existence something that doesn't exist.
There is no Antifa organization, so maybe that's good for social media, but it really is non-existent.
They exist on the internet in chat rooms and in 4chan and Discord and places like that, where they run discussion boards, trade tactics, documents, things like that, but none of them are called Antifa.
Well, all right. Thank you for stopping it there. And you can watch the whole thing, the whole video clip. So how would one explain this? And I'm sure you've seen this, but maybe not in the context which I'm attempting to deliver here. You know, Keith Ellison, right? Yeah. Sorry, I had to bring his name up, but he also claimed that nobody knows what an Antifa is. Except when you look back 7 years, go back to 2018. This is page 4 in the show notes. Take a look at this and tell me if you can believe what he says now or what any of those people said. This is Democratic Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison claiming nobody knows what Antifa is after he promoted their handbook in 2018. So there is a picture of him in 2018 or from 2018 at Moon Palace Books, and he found the book that strikes fear in the heart of Donald Trump. And frankly, everyone else, right? There it is right there. That's him 7 years ago. And today he's saying, well, that doesn't exist. That's the anti-fascist handbook or Antifa handbook that I quoted from. And of course, that book has been sold and resold, and you can find it in different places in the, you can find it in different places. Who pays for the printing? Where do the royalties go? Again, who pays for the printing? So when you start down that trail, you come to people like George Soros. You come to people like Justice in Education Fund. You come to the United Community Fund, People's Forum. And they're headed by their umbrella organization. It's called the Party for Socialism and Liberation. And that group that's operating behind enemy lines or within the United States are the people who are actually the ones responsible for, in whole or in part, supplying the foot soldiers who are attacking ICE today. So, I don't know if that made sense, but the bottom line is there's cash and support being given by Justice and Education Fund, United Communities Fund, the People's Forum, into the Party for Socialism and Liberation that funds the foot soldiers attacking our ICE agents, attacking our ICE buildings, and, of course, responsible for perhaps, again, perhaps because it gets a little cloudy, the publication of leaflets and books such as the Antifa Handbook and support of the foot soldiers. So take that and then you compare it to the cozy nature, the linkage between Antifa and, when you look at Antifa and you look at, for example, the group behind enemy lines, like I referenced before, there is a, think of a Venn diagram where you've got two circles and in the middle, you've got some common ground there, obviously. And that is behind enemy lines and Antifa. So to say Antifa is not organized is absolutely incorrect because the very people involved in both groups are involved in the execution of the activities of both groups. And they're very cagey about it. And they're very again, you've got to follow the money, but that's not an easy task. And you can get lost in there. But if you just simply connect the dots, you can see that they're being funded. And oh, I should add too, a lot of the funding was cut off with cutting off USAID because a lot of the money came from USAID and a lot of the money came from our own tax dollars to fund this through the intelligence community. Oh, yes. And some of the very people who directed the funding were some of the very people who were responsible for the attempted overthrow of our government, both in 2016 and 2020, if you want to get down to it. So there's that article, which is important to read, understand. And again, that book right there was written by Mark Bray. Now, who is Mark Bray? Mark Bray is a guy that, well, he taught at Rutgers and suddenly after Antifa was declared a terrorist organization, he fled the country. He left. Now, what was his position? He was a college professor at Rutgers, and you can read about this in this, but he fled the country. I'm telling you, The executive order from September 22nd changed a lot, and the pushback from the groups like ICE and the organizations, Tom Homan and others, to get after the people that allow this to happen, they caused the EO to be created, and from that now they have the ability to go after people behind the money and the operations. Did that make sense? I hope it did. And if it didn't, maybe I can find somebody to explain this a little bit better. And also, and I'll just say this also. And by the way, page 5 in the show notes, you can put this up. This is obviously Dr. Antifa. This Mark Bray is known as Dr. Antifa. Rutgers professor, known as Dr. Antifa. Yeah, he fled to Europe. And he's teaching online because he said he was receiving death threats following a petition to calling for his removal. Yeah, how sweet, how sad. Okay, so what's the significance of Rutgers? Well, guess what? Where's all of this indoctrination taking place at the college level? What was the big thing about President Trump cutting off funding to universities and colleges? This is part of it. And you know the other part of it too, because a lot of the same funding mechanisms or mechanisms that fund Antifa and place and groups like Behind Enemy Lines, they also fund the trans ideology. They fund the programs that force this indoctrination into the trans ideology. Read all about Dr. Antifa right there again in the show notes, HagmanPI.com. I'm not going to spend more time on that. So, yeah, start looking at this funding machine and you think, okay, how far back does this go? And we know it goes back quite a long time. Let me ask you this. Do you remember Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Awan brothers, all of that? The Islamic component to... Yeah, okay. Well, Wasserman Schultz and others are heavily involved in the overthrow. I believe this to be true based on everything I've researched, in the overthrow of this country. But by the way, before I move to that, I just want to show you, for those people who believe, like, for example, all of this is just these are just ideas, these are organic, not really built you know, by big money, black money. Eric the Tech, let's see here. The fourth, fifth, or sixth. Pick the Chicago targets, for example. Any university that complies with the failure to indoctrinate are targets of the Behind Enemy Lines group, Antifa, and other groups. So in other words, if you're an administrator at a university, I'll move to that as opposed to asking you to change that image. I'll move to that. There are the October 7th group. Now, that was, they had planned this year, October 7th, to target anybody, for example, any business, and disrupt any business who did not comply with their demands. And they published, and this is something that law enforcement does have at the federal level now, they published a list of targets. There is, I think that is, yeah, the Chicago list. And I've got New York City lists and all sorts of different lists. Now, if you want to go to Break the Butchers graphic, as opposed to throwing up the rest, we'll just go directly to Break the Butchers graphic. This Okay, that's, well, actually, they have, I there's no way I can put these in the show notes, but for example, if you're the administrator of a university, for example, Tufts University Board of Butchers, if, for example, you decline or you comply with the President Trump to maintain federal funds because you're not adherent to the indoctrination, whether it's the trans ideology or, you know, allowing your campus to cater to Antifa, or if you, for example, want to allow TPUSA there, you're going to have a target on your back. And these are floating around, and these people, I'm telling you right now, there are targets for assassination. This is terrorism. This is domestic terrorism. And there are numerous, and I mean numerous, flyers and photos with the administrators of certain universities being listed as targets, in addition to anyone else non-compliant with their objectives. Okay. So I don't know if I made the case, but there it is. Now, all of this, these are now, you've got to go back to Wasserman Schultz, and let me find this too. Because there's some good information here, or if you know what you're looking for, you can say, yeah, you know what? This now makes sense in terms of who was in our leader positions of leadership, bringing in, for example, Islamic spies, terrorists, whatever you want to call them. And what were they doing back then? Well, they were at that time. And again, this is pre-President Trump, this is the Obama heydays in the Hillary, you know, on deck time period. It was people like Wasserman Schultz and others who were planning overthrows, planning to throw, kind of knocking our republic off its, attempting to attack our constitutional republic. And let me see if I, yeah, this is, and oh, who was sponsoring all that? At that time, it was George Soros. Now it's Alex Soros. And of course, who did he marry? But let's go to cut eight here. This is three minutes long. And look at this in terms of 2016 and before, but specifically 2016 forward, but also in the back of your mind, think, wait a second. She was doing stuff with the Iran brothers. She was doing stuff with with Keith Ellison and others, other leaders. And planning and assisting in the setting up of the infrastructure of the people that we're talking about today. This is cut eight. This is 3 minutes. This might this might kind of bring some stuff together here. Go ahead.
In July of 2016, the memorandums detail emails from Leonard Bernardo, who headed the Eurasia desk of George Soros's Open Society Foundation, and Jeffrey Goldstein, who also worked on that Eurasia desk, to and from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chair of the Democratic National Committee. The first memo details how Hillary Clinton was going to defeat FBI investigations of her mishandling of classified information on her private email server and the pay-to-play corruption of the Clinton Foundation. That involved direct interventions of Barack Obama and Attorney General Loretta Lynch. It says Clinton's crimes were known by the DNC and Obama since June of 2015, and Obama was going to obstruct FBI investigations of Clinton because they would, quote, damage his legacy. Here's what it says, quote, Obama has no intention to darken the final part of his presidency and legacy by the scandal surrounding the main contender from the Democratic Party. To solve this problem, the president puts pressure on FBI Director James Comey through Attorney General Lynch, however, so far without concrete results. The March 2016 memo continues in the same vein. emphasizing that the Clinton server problem has been solved through, quote, timely deletion of emails and Barack Obama's sanctioning the use of all levers to subvert the FBI's investigations. But it goes on to note that the Clinton campaign, with the assistance of the intelligence services, is now formulating a campaign to attack Trump by smearing him as a tool of Russian mobsters. Here's what the email says. Among other things, the Clinton staff, with support from special services, is preparing scandalous revelations of the business relations between Trump and the Russian mafia. A third report, received from the same FBI source in late July of 2016, exposes another round of Soros Great Society email correspondence with Hillary Clinton's foreign policy team. This memo finds Clinton's foreign policy advisor, Juliana Smith, telling the Soros boys that Hillary has signed off on a campaign strategy to smear Trump as a Putin agent using the lie that Russia provided DNC and Open Society hacked emails to WikiLeaks as the opener of that campaign. Since they think the election is in the bag for Hillary, their emphasis is on demonizing Trump and Putin. Here's the big part of the email on July 25th. Bernardo writes, the media analysis on the DNC hacking looks solid. He goes on to say, Julie says it will be a long-term affair to demonize Putin and Trump. Now it is good for...
All right. I was looking for the other, or for the remainder of that video. I was unable to find it. If anyone knows of that video and can find it, fire it off to me, Doug at HagmanReport.com, Doug at HagmanReport.com. All right. What I was trying to get at is Obama brought in a certain element. Obama, the construct of the intelligence community, specifically the CIA, but also the Five Eyes, the construct of that brought in the Islamic terrorist component into this country, 7 years after 9/11, and began really set up and began to refine the SDS infrastructure that was in place back in the 60s and expand upon that also, but specifically using the Muslim component. Fast forward to, you know, Hillary Clinton and Wasserman Schultz and the Awan brothers. The Awan brothers did mega damage in D.C. Took a lot of information, proprietary, classified, compartmentalized information, and shared it with the Islamic terrorists in the Middle East. And that also gave them the ability to open up the gates to come into the United States and set up shop. You remember, of course, the paramilitary camps we talked about and the mosques and everything else. And of course, we see that today in Minnesota with the calls to prayer and the no-go zones. And then, of course, you have what? The New York City, the Islamic patrols. At the same time, concurrent with all of that, you had Hillary dealing with the Communist Chinese Party. And we see then, during that same time, Confucius Institutes opening up and other in the acquisition and purchasing of land, very critical land by the Communist Chinese Party. And of course, the sale of uranium, our rare earth assets, to our adversaries. Okay, so move forward, and then again, with Obama doing what he did, and people will say, well, you know what? He deported more people than Donald Trump to this point. That's true. But who did he really deport? Numbers wise, at the moment, that might be true. However, the people he brought in were far more dangerous at that time, and had a purpose setting up this behind enemy lines operation. So then you go to 2016, and when Hillary was on the ropes, and of course the Biden laptop and all this stuff was working against her, They had the intelligence community, and the communists within had to create this adversarial situation against President Trump. And here to remind you about that is this. You know this, but again, some people need to be reminded. It doesn't necessarily have to be you, but listen to this. This is Cut 14. We're only going to play a few minutes of this. It's an 8-minute long clip, but we'll just play a minute or two of this. This is Cut 14, Irrefutable Evidence of Treason. We'll pick it up with 2016 moving forward. And again, think about the organizations I mentioned, and also think about the Democratic Party itself. A major funding mechanism that distributes cash, black money, to the communist infiltrators all across the U.S. What a great way to do it, through the party itself. Here's Cut 14.
News alert, the director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, releasing a bombshell report today that shows a conspiracy by a sitting president, Barack Obama, and his intel agencies to sabotage the president-elect, Donald Trump, brainwash the electorate, and undermine the legitimacy of an election.
There is irrefutable evidence that detail how President Obama and his national security team directed the creation of an intelligence community assessment that they knew was false. They knew it would promote this contrived narrative that Russia interfered in the 2016 election to help President Trump win, selling it to the American people as though it were true. It wasn't.
Gabbard got her hands on a House intel report that's been locked away in a CIA vault for almost a decade. Investigators spent over 2,000 hours looking into how the Russia hoax was born, interviewing 20 CIA and FBI officials. And it turns out that the Obama administration doctored the intelligence to make it look like Putin and Trump stole the election. A month after Trump beat Hillary, Barack Obama wasn't satisfied with his intelligence reporting and ordered his CIA director to create a new assessment of how Russia interfered with the election. This was a highly unusual move. John Brennan handpicked 5 CIA analysts to write the assessment, and they were siloed. None of them knew what the other was doing. And only one analyst was in charge of drafting this report. There was nothing routine about this, and it was a rush job to publish before Trump was sworn in. Nothing was coordinated with the other intelligence agencies either. Basically, this was home cooking for Barack Obama. There were 4 key elements from the assessment that were repeated over and over again and formed the basis of the Russia hoax and the Robert Mueller witch hunt. 1, that Vladimir Putin wanted Donald Trump to win. 2, Putin took action to help Trump win. 3, the Russians had blackmail on Trump. That was the Steele dossier. And 4, that the Russians tried colluding with the Trump campaign. None of any of this was ever true. There was no reliable intelligence to support any of these allegations. Senior CIA officials repeatedly refused to traffic in these allegations, but they were repeatedly overruled by CIA Director Brennan and FBI Director Comey, who insisted that they be pushed, even without verifiable evidence. The Obama administration cherry-picked the intelligence, lied about their sources, misquoted sources, didn't corroborate their claims, suppressed intelligence that ran counter to their narratives, and even used anonymous internet postings. Rank-and-file CIA admitted what they were doing violated their own tradecraft standards. There was a massive pressure campaign that came right from the top. CIA analysts say they received unusual directives from political appointees, the CIA director, and Obama himself. This is how the Russia hoax was born.
Donald Trump knows that the Russians helped him win in 2016.
Putin hated Secretary Clinton so much that the flip side of that coin was he had a clear preference for the person running against the person he hated so much.
It was Russia in a very systematic way in trying to interfere in the election and to try to advance the prospects of Donald Trump being elected.
This was such a malicious disinformation campaign perpetrated on the American people that at one point, 60% of Democrats believe the Russians hacked our voting machines to help Trump win the White House.
Okay, you can cut that. I think you get the idea, right? I think it's pretty evident here that there are obviously the intelligence community is rather autonomous in terms of how they act, and some of the dark money, the black money funding that they get, the black ops and such, that plays a huge role in this. But the street level fights are a big part of this. The mayors, and in some cases the governors, are receiving the funds, receiving money from the various groups I already mentioned. And by the way, some of the organizations heavily involved in pass-through or collection of and then pass-through money include Act Blue, the Action Network, and believe it or not, Fidelity Investments Charitable Gift Fund. Oh, doesn't that sound, just doesn't that give you the warm fuzzies? And Schwab Charitable Fund. So let me say that again. Some of the organizations, Act Blue, Action Network, Fidelity Investments Charitable Gift Fund, and Schwab Charitable Fund. There you are. There's Action Network right there. And there's, what is that? So you get the idea, right? Thank you for that. Different organizations that present a good front, the Schwab Charitable Fund right there. Hey, look, we do good things. But a lot of these, if you follow the circular funding, you will find a lot of this money ends up being used to fund what we see today. And I want to just close this out or show you this. For example, where and we can also trace, although this is not ready for prime time yet, if you want to kind of take a look at what happened in with the release of the bioweapon, there was some dark money being funneled through some of the big tech giants, and you know this, but this could be proved through some forensic accounting investigation. And again, look, folks, I know it's boring, but when you get to the end of all of these, here we find the usual suspects: Obama, the head of the CIA, as operational loons, you know, directing certain operations against the American people, and then the oligarchs like Singham and others, and Zuckerberg, and people like Thiel and other people, also funding through the Democratic Party itself, black money or money for black ops, and how it's all spread out. And then you've got, as I just showed you, the various companies, the NGOs or the corporations who are funding the street level violence and are underwriting all of this. Can we prove it? Absolutely, we can prove it. It's in development now, and by way of that September 22nd, less than a month ago, that EO is pushing toward investigations, financial investigations. And why? Remember that announcement, I think it was by Tulsi or maybe by President Trump, about the Treasury investigating the origins of some of this dark money? Why would the Treasury be investigating this? That's a big piece of information, but I'm going to show you exactly what's happening now and what, and I don't know if you've seen this, but I thought this was really important, because what is happening in places like Chicago and Portland and Minneapolis, and even to a lesser extent, some of the places like Pittsburgh, that don't get a lot of the press. Ben Berkwam did a ride along. Did you see this? This whole thing is like 20 minutes, but I just want to play the first couple of minutes, because listen to what they're up against. You know, the people that, well, you're going to see this. There are going to be people that come out of the house, their houses in the neighborhood, and they're seemingly organic. Like they're, you know, they're pointing to the ICE agents who are trying to effect an arrest. They're outing the vehicles. They're hiding the criminals. And I mean criminals. Are they doing this just out of pure desire? Are they that far indoctrinated, or is there something else going on? When you look at how quickly the mob forms, I think you may be convinced that this is not organic, at least not in every neighborhood all the time. And in this case, I think it became clear, very clear. In fact, we'll play like the first 2 minutes and then advance it toward the, 18-minute mark. And you're going to see some things and say, wait a second, that doesn't look right. Why are the police protecting the so-called neighborhood residents who object to the ICE movements? What's up with that? Follow the leadership up the chain and look who's giving the orders and look at how they are living and their lifestyle and their money in the bank. And you're going to have some answers, I'm telling you, because this is the way it works. The template is the same. The names might differ. The locations might differ. But the sources of funding and the mechanism of funding are the same. Go ahead. And this is clip... What did I say? Eric, help me out here. Do we have it?
He's got 2 convictions, unlawful use of a weapon. And he's a gang member from back of the yards. He's from Mexico. There's one particular event where a Guatemalan female, single mother of 2, was in a Lyft or Uber, one of the two, with her boyfriend, going to get dinner after they moved into the to a new apartment, and just happened to be driving through the back of the yards to go to whatever restaurant they were driving to, and it was pretty late in the evening. I'd say probably around 9:30, and the Latin Saints were out partying, and they thought the Uber was a rival gang member coming through, and they shot, I believe, 2 or 3 rounds from an AK-47. One of the rounds went through the back of the trunk, hit the Guatemalan female in the back, went through her heart, killed her instantly while she was FaceTiming her mother.
Oh, wow.
So her mother basically saw her daughter get murdered. And I know this guy was there and was told that he was the one who hit the AK-47 after the shooting. He's already been ordered removed back in 2013 or 2014, but
wow.
Filed a bunch of motion to reopen. Everything's been denied. He does have a pending court case next year, but since he's been out on ICE bond, he went and picked up another gun conviction.
Wow.
There you go. Okay, can you advance that to like 15 minutes, roughly 15-minute mark? Because they arrived at the neighborhood. The